Duke Ellington called Miles Davis the Picasso of invisible art, and it's an apt comparison. Both were artists who refused to repeat themselves, craftsmen whose work can be divided into distinct periods. Davis was a first-generation bebopper and foil to the great Charlie Parker, a distinctive soloist with the Gil Evans Orchestra in the Birth of the Cool era, a leader of some of the great small groups of the 50s and 60s, and in his last great creative surge, a pioneer in the use of electric instruments and funk rhythms inspired by James Brown and Sly Stone. That last period is the focus of the Miles Electric Band, coming to Waikiki tomorrow night. Vince Wilburn Jr., drummer in that band and Miles Davis's nephew, is with us in our studio. Vince, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
It's a great to meet you.
And yeah.
By the time you got with your uncle's band, he was very much into the contemporary electric funk sound, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Funk and pop tunes, like mm-hmm. Human Nature and yeah. Time After Time.
Yeah. And, of course, the jazz bourgeoisie sort of looked down on this.
Lenny White, we call it the jazz police.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, people who don't play instruments, who enforce the styles of music.
Right.
Yeah, jazz has always been kind of hindered by that, but Miles had little regard for that.
He did not care. You know, he's like, we can't say what he really said. You know?
No.
Not on this show.
Yeah, known for his colorful vocabulary.
That's right.
As well as for his music.
Right.
But, you know, that's a very adventuresome time, you know, from let's say, Jack Johnson and Miles in the Sky and Bitches Brew onward.
Mm-hmm.
And Ophie to Kilimanjaro when he first added electric piano.
Mm-hmm.
And it just took off from there. And there's a whole school of music based on what he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he was into Sly, around that time, Sly and
yep.
Jimmy and Herbie has a great story of the Fender Rhodes, the electric piano.
Mm-hmm.
And he playing it. It was in the studio. And Herbie said, well, where's the piano? He said, yeah, it's right there. You know, it was the Fender Rhodes piano. That was the first date.
Yeah.
One of the first sessions with the Fender Rhodes.
Yeah.
So,
and it that really made for a very different style of playing because you couldn't fly around the keyboard on a Fender Rhodes.
It was not to control, but it was different. It was a different style, different sound.
Yeah.
You know.
Different texture.
Yes.
And he loved textures. That's one thing that's really consistent, I think, throughout all his music.
Mm-hmm.
The textures
mm-hmm.
around him, right?
Definitely.
There's that whole thing of, you know, because sometimes when you hear his trumpet playing, even in the more out there electric stuff that he did, it's pretty consistent all the way back to, you know, the 1940s with Charlie Parker, mm-hmm. that same.
It's that sound.
Yeah.
You know, that sound permeates whatever bed was laid, you know,
mm-hmm.
be it electronics, be it Gil Evans, mm-hmm. you know. Prince, you know, because he recorded with Prince.
Yeah,
it was always that distinctive Miles sound.
Yeah. And, you know, in the bebop era when he came up, everybody was playing really complex, right? Lots and lots of chord changes and lots of notes.
Yeah.
Real fast. Like Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
And he took a completely different approach, didn't he?
Yeah. He has a story. Well, he was standing next to Bird one day, and so the club owner said, well, Bird, you don't have a trumpet player. And he said, yes, I do. And he pointed to Uncle Miles, and, you know, Uncle Miles is a teenager.
Yeah.
He said, and so Uncle Miles was looking around like, who is he talking about? He said, you.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So, yeah, so that was his start.
Yeah, well, no. He.
But, I mean, you know, to play with Bird, you know how nervous you'd have to be to play trumpet next to Charlie Parker and after Dizzy and all those, and Max playing all those fast tempos.
Yeah, he was the most advanced musician.
But Bird heard something in him, you know.
Yeah, no, he really did. And Miles remained consistent with what Bird heard through the next, you know, what, 50, 60 years of music. But, you know, one of the things when you read his book read a lot of the comments he made over the years, a lot of times he wanted to simplify the complexity of bebop. He would take sections and say, let's just take out all the 2/5s and then just stay on that chord for 8 bars, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
because he saw that as a challenge, you know,
mm-hmm.
just giving you one chord and what can you do over that, right?
Well, you know what I love? I love ballads. Anytime he plays a ballad, we used to have in the set list, the second song was always a ballad,
mm-hmm.
a blues, you know. And you should have heard the screams of the fans when we went into the blues, the second number of the show.
Well, you know, the
St. Louis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
he used to take his boys down to the riverboat and check out the bands that would come up the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And they said if the drummer wasn't setting his drums up right, they would leave for some reason.
Well, you know, the blues is a lot about restraint, isn't it?
Yes. Like, we talked about it, you know, off mic.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know,
with the Midwest and, that, you know, Phil Upchurch and all those guys. And,
right.
And I think it's a Midwest thing, you know. I mean,
Chicago.
Yeah. St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, then down.
Well, you know,
down the river.
In New York, you show everything you can do. In the Midwest, you withhold a lot.
Yes.
And imply that there's more where that came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a very different aesthetic, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, definitely. Restraint.
And you're from Chicago, so blues was all over.
Yeah.
Listening to WVON and
Purvis
Spann. Purvis Spann, the all-night blues band.
Yeah, Lucky Cordell. Yeah. Grew up on the South Side. And the cool thing about it, even with WLS, some of the other stations, there wasn't like, it wasn't just black radio. It was radio.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have all, you know, rock, blues, funk, all on the same station.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Even though you had like specific, you know, radio stations. But coming up as a kid in Chicago, you were exposed to all types of music. And mm-hmm. I think that's important, you know, instead of segregating music. You know, that's where the kids lose out.
Yeah, I agree because, and I think it also is a big influence on the kind of musician you become later in life. The sounds you heard when you were a kid.
Sure, sure.
What you fell in love with, what you didn't.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then if I didn't get it, my uncle. See, they used to be, they were, back in the day, they were, they called them record guys who would take records, actually physically take records to the stations, you know, mm-hmm. to get them played. So there was a guy named Mr. White. We called him Granny. It's Granville White. So my uncle would call Granny to say, hey, take these records to my nephew, you know, that he wanted me to check out.
Wow.
As a kid, I'm 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
But, you know, I knew if they were coming, if Mr. White was coming by, I needed to check these records out, you know. So that's how I got in, got hip to Otis Redding,
mm-hmm.
James Brown, all the Stax,
Soul
Sly,
music.
Buddy Miles, the Band of Gypsies with mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, you know, it was fairly uncommon for jazz musicians in the 60s to have their ears open to all that stuff.
Yeah,
and that's where
yeah.
Miles was really different.
Yeah, yeah. He always played out, you know, outside the box, you know.
Yeah.
Never within the rules. Never, yeah. never, never.
There's a famous Downbeat interview where they went over to his house and they were shocked to see all these Sly and records and James Brown records. They thought he'd be listening to who knows what.
Yeah, he used to cook for Buddy Miles.
Is that right?
He would make this dish called a bouillabaisse.
Uh huh.
And he said Buddy would eat the whole pot of bouillabaisse. You know.
And it showed too. Oh,
yeah.
But you know, he's really such an influential artist, and his influence is really just as strong today.
Yeah.
As it was, you know, well, really throughout our lifetimes.
You know, Chris, even putting the band together, the Smiles Electric Band, you've got DJ Logic, who's a turntablist.
Mm-hmm.
You get Blackbird McKnight, who plays with George Clinton and P-Funk. Daryl, grew up together, Bobby Irving and I. Daryl plays with the Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. He's playing bass. So it's like, but we all grew up listening to different music. So we're not locked into anything. And that's what Miles taught us. We call it Miles Davis University.
Well, that's where the future of music, has got to be.
Yeah.
Vince, I could talk to you for hours.
No, we have to talk to the kids about this so they keep the open mind, you know?
Yeah, I quite agree.
I'd love to come back and talk to you.
Hey, it'd be my pleasure, Vince. Thanks so much.
Come on down to the Blue Note.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Peace, man.
Vince Wilburn Jr. is the drummer in the Miles Electric Band, which will perform at Blue Note, Hawaii, tomorrow through Saturday.